Blog Talk Radio.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to Talk Talk. I am your host, Kim Davis, and so excited that you have joined me for today. I am getting my earpiece. I almost forgot about that. So if the audio sounds a little hollow, just give me a second and it will be better. Welcome to Chalk Talk. It has been quite a busy week in the world of sports. It's just been a busy week in the world, period, right? It is October. It's that time of year. There is so much happening. Here we go. Now I have my earpiece, which also means I can have my microphone, and we will all be better for it. There we go. All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome. Thank you for joining me on today's show. You know what? I like that intro music. Let's just play it one more time. So I don't know if you guys remember, but a friend of mine, Tori Stoops, who is a musician, music for me. Thank you again, Frank. Heard my previous music and thought, you know what, Kim, it's time for some new music, and he created that for me. So thank you, Corey. Welcome to Chalk Talk. It is a beautiful day here in Houston, Texas. We are. I have some exciting things on the schedule for today's show. We're going to talk some baseball, right? We're going to talk some baseball. The Houston Astros are headed to the American League Championship Series. In fact, game one is tomorrow night at Minute Maid Park. They do play host to the New York Yankees. We're going to talk about that, of course. And we are, you know, it is still football season. We're going to talk about what's happening with the Houston Texans. The Houston Texans lost to the Kansas City Chiefs, but of course they lost a whole lot more than just a football game last Sunday night. We're going to talk about that as well. And it is the preseason for the NBA. The Houston Rockets officially have a new owner, Tilman Fertitta. These earrings are hitting my little earpiece. Tilman Fertitta officially has been approved to be the owner of the Houston Rockets. He met with the media and just the Houston friends and fans on Tuesday for a press conference. And so the Tilman Fertitta era of the Houston Rockets has officially begun. And preseason also continues to be underway in basketball. But with so much going on in baseball and, of course, football, it makes it a little difficult to really get all those things in. But I did want to remind you that the Houston Rockets have a new owner. It is a new era, and we will see what the Tilman Fertitta era, what that looks like. Wow, you know, when I first started covering the NBA and the Houston Rockets, Charlie Thomas was the owner. Great guy. Got a chance to know Charlie and his wife, Kitsy. Great owners, great people. Love the game, love the community. They were just a joy to work with and cover. You know, just really a really cool family. And then right before the Rockets won the championship in 93 and 94, Les Alexander bought the team from Charlie Thomas. So I've covered the Rockets through the entire Les Alexander era, and now here we are, and the Rockets have a new owner. It is the third owner that I will have covered, and the third kind of franchise ownership, and I'll be curious to see what the Tilman Fertitta era looks like. You know, Tilman Fertitta owns Landry. He's an entertainment guy, right? He owns over 600 restaurants, the Golden Nugget Casinos in Vegas and on the boardwalk, I guess in New Jersey he owns something. Of course, he owns the Kima Boardwalk and Pleasure Pier and stuff in Galveston. And he's got TV shows, and he's an entertainment guy. So while he says he's confident in the Rockets organization in terms of their basketball people, and he said in the Rockets organization and management, period. He didn't break it down. But what I'm saying is I think it's clear the basketball stuff he's going to leave to the basketball people. He's going to let Daryl Morey do what he does, and he will definitely have input when deals are being done. But he is, like he said, that office is in the Toyota Center. he's not going to be there. He's going to be at his office over on Post Oak Lane. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what kind of a Tilman Fertitta twist we see on this Rocket scene. He already said that the food will be better in the media lounge, and he talked about the Rocket, the team cafeteria, changing that. So he's a food guy. He's an entertainment guy. And so he's going to do those things off the bat. But what, if any, what other stuff will we see about differences will we see with this Houston Rockets franchise? We will have to wait and see. He wanted the team when Les bought it. And, you know, Les got the team. They remained friends and had a relationship over the years. He's a huge supporter of all the sports franchises in this town. And feels like the NBA is the industry of the major sports leagues to be in. And it was interesting to hear his comments about that. So you'll hear more about Tilman Fertitta, but I did want to mention that today because we probably won't talk much more about it on today's show. So there are a couple of things that have happened since we were last together in this format. I mean, we're together throughout the week. I appreciate all of you guys who follow me on Twitter at Kim Davis, on Instagram at kim.y.davis. Thank you for being a part of the tribe, and continue to, you know, to be a part of the tribe. I appreciate that. So last weekend, a big weekend in the National Football League, of course. It's always a big weekend. But before we could even really get to some of the games, like the biggest game, you know, that I covered over the weekend, you know, the Houston Texans, right? The Houston Texans played host to the Kansas City Chiefs. So that was a Sunday night game. But before we could even get to the game starting, right, there's this breaking news, if you will, out of Miami, where a Dolphins assistant coach, the offensive line coach, there's a video all over social media, all over the internet, of him snorting a white powder, which we think could be cocaine, you know, in a $20 bill, and making this video that he then sends to a woman, who some say is a stripper or, you know, model or whatever you would like to call her. She is not the story, although many people have tried to make her the story, which I find to be somewhat fascinating. But he's in a meeting room at work, the Dolphins facility, and in this video he's talking about how, you know, if you haven't seen it, he's talking about how he's, you know, about to go and, you know, have this meeting, but he is snorting, I would say, cocaine. And he says some things that are obscene, and I'm not going to repeat, but and then he misses her and all this, right? Well, she posts the video, and the video obviously goes viral. So the next morning he, you know, issues an apology, and he resigns from his job with the Miami Dolphins. He's one of the top paid assistant coaches in the National Football League. And so the lady who posted the video, the one who sent the video to, who was not his wife, that's, you know, he does have a wife and three kids, but she was not his wife. And she said that, you know, it was kind of her way of dealing with what she thought was the hypocrisy of him. He was someone who would complain about the players who were protesting and you know, taking a knee and protesting the national anthem, although the protest isn't about the national anthem. That's another story. But he had issues with that. Really? So are you somebody who stood for the anthem? Because that behavior, to me, violates all kinds of stuff, besides the fact that it breaks the actual law, and kneeling for the anthem is not against the law. But so that became a big story. And I have heard people say, you know, they feel really sorry for him. You know, maybe she got a better paying sugar daddy. And I'm like, how is any of that the issue? Like, how is that the story? How is she the story? I don't know. Yeah. I just find that to be, that was fascinating to me. It was disappointing, but then so many things are disappointing to me about what's happening right now throughout in our society. So that's one story that's been going on, right? That's one story that has been going on. And the other story that broke earlier this week was on Monday, ESPN suspended sports anchor Jemele Hill, who is the co-host of The Six, which is SportsCenter's signature show. They mentioned suspended her on Monday for 2 weeks because of some because of her social media post, right? And so what people started to post and say is that she, your feed is freezing up. Okay. I think it's the internet, and I'm going to be changing my internet provider because sometimes we have this issue. Thank you for that, Elenis. He said his feed is freezing up. Good morning, Freddie Willis. Welcome, welcome. So Jemele Hill was suspended for 2 weeks on Monday of this week because of her social media post. And many people said that she called for a boycott of the National Football League. And, in fact, I went to her Twitter feed because I did a show this week, Isaiah Carey's show, The Insight, Uncensored, and I wanted to make sure that I had read all of the posts that she put up. And one of her posts clearly stated, let's be clear, I am not calling for a NFL boycott, all right? But what she did say, all right, so ladies, if you click on that link, then you can join me from there and I can bring you into the show. Good morning, Don Payne. Welcome back. I'm glad to know that your surgery went well. And it's good to have you back on. I know what it was. It was that whole idea about baseball, right? We're going to talk a lot of baseball today. But let me finish this about Jemele Hill. If you don't agree with her, you know, her being outspoken in her positions, you have to understand if you follow her, that is who she is and who she has always been. It is the thing, I think, that made her has added to her popularity on ESPN, which is what made the show his and hers a success, and which is what made ESPN decide to elevate them to host their signature show. So I think that ESPN has to decide who they're going to be, right? And people say, well, there's precedent because Bill Simmons was fired or let go and was, you know, when he made his political comments, and so there's precedent for them censoring, if you will, Jemele Hill. But then you need to be accurate about what it is that she said, right? You need to be clear about what she said, and what she said was that the onus shouldn't be on the players just to carry this boycott forward, you know. That's their job, and I'm adding my two cents in. But she talked about that being, you know, it shouldn't all be on them. That people who are watching games, they have a choice. They can choose to not watch or they can choose to not buy things. But she also then said, let's be clear, I'm not calling for an NFL boycott. Well, she was suspended for 2 weeks. So where does this go? Like, what happens next when she comes back? Because do you want Jemele Hill to no longer be the person she's been throughout her career, the person she has been on your network, which has, while there are people who may criticize her, also has garnered her a pretty large following. So it's an interesting time that we're in right now, and we all have to navigate it the way that makes sense for us. But I'm just not really sure what happens with this? Like, what happens next? So I just wanted to throw that out, and feel free if you have comments and you want to talk about it. So you have that going on. And then in terms of the National Football League, you also have the owners meeting. I think the owners' meetings are next week. But you've got the owners who are really, I think, reacting to President Trump interjecting himself into this conversation after he, you know, talked about Colin Kaepernick, you know, called the NFL players SOBs, said he has also said, well, the NFL should have a rule to where players have to stand for the anthem. Well, how about this? The NFL owners are contemplating instituting a rule to where you have to stand for the national anthem. Is that crazy to anybody but me? It's interesting. I was hoping to have a constitutional lawyer join us today to talk about it. She may or may not join us, but if not, it is an interview I'm going to do because I want to know what is legal. Okay, let's see here. I am not sure why this is not letting. We're going to do a little something. Let me do something. Okay. So this NFL issue that started with Colin Kaepernick has turned into really something else. And I'm just not really sure what, you know. I don't know what the deal is. I'm trying to send this to my guest, and it looks like it's cutting off. Let's try it again. Okay, I think I got it. All right, so Alanis Westbrook is going to be joining us shortly, and then a little bit later in the show, I have an actual relief pitcher from a retired relief pitcher who has played for the Cleveland Indians and the Houston Astros is going to join us a little bit after that. So the president interjected himself into this conversation about what's happening in the National Football League. Now, there's some history there with President Trump. Now, remember, he, you know, owned the USFL. He has tried on more than one occasion to join the NFL Club of Owners, and he has not been let in. I don't think he has ever really gotten over that. Since he's been president, there's one thing we do know is that he is a little vindictive, and he holds grudges, much more so on people of color and women than others, but nevertheless, he has attacked Colin Kaepernick. He has attacked Jemele Hill. He has had nothing really to say about the man who took all those lives in Las Vegas. And the white supremacists and neo-Nazis who again marched on Charlottesville, West Virginia, he hadn't really said anything. It's been, you know, total silence. So, but let's talk about this football thing. So I don't want to even really spend a whole lot of time talking about the president. Whoops. But I do want to say it is important to look at what's happening. You know, what Colin Kaepernick started, and you guys have heard me say it a number of times, it was about much more. It was never about the flag or the anthem. And let's be clear, if you want to talk about the anthem, anybody who talks about the anthem and people lacking patriotism because they don't want to stand for the anthem, or I want you to go online and Google lyrics for the national anthem, and I want you to look at the lyrics for the entire song, and especially the third stanza. And so tell me at that point why I should want to sing that song. I mean, you know, we could pull out the first stanza and all feel very patriotic and very happy. I mean, listen, I'm an American. I get it. Don't tell me to go back where I came from. I was born here. This is where I came from. I've heard that from a few people. This is where I came from. Now, if you should have thought about that with my ancestors and left them where they were, then maybe I wouldn't be here. But that's not what happened, and so this is where I came from. At any rate, the anthem was never written for me. You know, it wasn't written for me or my ancestors or people who look like me. Because the whole song is the whole song. And you can't just take out one part and pretend the other part doesn't exist. But we as a nation have adopted the whole song because many people, quite frankly and quite honestly, don't even know what the whole song says. So I just encourage you, when you get a moment, to look at the whole song, maybe even Google it, and you can actually hear somebody singing the entire song. So the players taking a knee, starting with Colin Kaepernick, was never about I want to protest the anthem or even protest the lyrics I'm talking about in the anthem. It's about protesting behavior that is exclusive in terms of making all of us feel included in this great American dream and great American way, being protected and being cared for and loved. All of us don't have or not embraced the same. You know, we talk about social injustice. I heard Mike Ditka, which I should be slapping myself for even repeating it, but it was so ridiculous. It bears worth saying on some level. Talked about it. He didn't think there's been any oppression in the past 100 years. Really? Is that what you think? Well, I think you're wrong, and apparently approaching some phases of senility. That's craziness. Of course there's been oppression. I mean, the 60s happened. How long ago was that? That gets us to that last 100 years. So you're telling me since 1917 there's been no oppression? Really? Okay. So a lot of people are weighing in, and they're weighing in ways that are just not accurate and not, I want to almost say not relevant, because they're just not right. They're wrong. They're getting it wrong, all right? So what I encourage you to do is not to be emotional, but it is a topic that can make us emotional. I know I have to caution myself and remember my yoga breathing and all those things, even though I haven't done yoga since before my ankle surgery. I can't wait to get back on the mat. But when somebody's talking to you about the NFL protests or players and, you know, just try to make sure that you speak from a point of being factual and try not to get all caught up in, because people can get you caught up in a bunch of foolishness. They can get you caught up in a bunch of foolishness, and it has become a much more volatile issue since the president, you know, put himself into the conversation about the National Football League and whether or not players should stand for the anthem. So, I'll be curious to see what the NFL players, what the NFL owners decide at their meeting. The NFL does not have a rule like the NBA does. The NBA has a policy that everybody must stand for the anthem. The NFL does not have that. So I don't know. It seems like they're going to try to see what they can do to implement something like that. Now, Jerry Jones, you know, has come out and said that his players must all stand. And he's given players an opportunity, if they want to come and talk to him one-on-one about how they feel about it, they can do that. But my understanding from talking to people who cover the team is that Jerry Jones's position was, you know, some of the players, you know, are getting pressure not just from, you know, what do I do as it relates to other people on my team, but my family, you know, maybe my wife or family members saying, you better take a knee or you better not take a knee. So it's a lot of distraction. And so before they can even just get to where they're just playing football, so he said, let me set a policy that everybody has to do the same thing, and it frees players up from having to feel the pressure of making those decisions individually, whether it's, you know, having the conversations with their family or their friends or their community. So I can't say that's not the truth. That's not why it is. And, of course, he also did talk about the bottom line. I mean, if it affects viewers and ratings and numbers, it affects the NFL's and the owner's bottom line, which will ultimately affect the players' bottom line. So there are a lot to think about as it relates to the NFL players and as it relates to the, you know, owners and what they're going to do in this whole national anthem protest. And here's what I'd like to see happen. I just feel like the conversation's gotten hijacked from what it's supposed to be about. And so how do we move it forward? You know, like what's a realistic thing that can happen? I heard somebody say briefly yesterday, and I don't know, it was a national broadcast, I can't tell you which one, I don't remember, that there was some talk about there being a month, you know, like there's recognition of Breast Cancer Awareness Month with the National Football League. So would there be an issue of recognizing national, I don't know, Social Injustice Month and a Let's Be Kind to People of Color Month? I don't know what they call it or what they do. But I am interested in how we move the conversation forward so that we have it about what it needs to be had about and we don't just keep talking about the anthem and when that's really not even what the conversation is about, what the problems are about. I know that my feed is freezing up over on Facebook Live. I see that. I'm not sure why. I think there's a I'm going to think it's not even the internet. I think there may be a problem with the platform. So, I'm going to ask you to, I may have to stop with the broadcast freezing up. Anyway, so this is Chalk Talk, and we are talking about all things sports. We are definitely going to talk about some baseball. The Houston Astros are headed to the American League Championship Series for the first time ever. And so there are many who goes, yeah, it's the first time since 2005. No, it's not, because in 2005, the Astros were part of the American League, part of the National League. So they've never played in the American League Championship Series. They played in the National League Championship Series. So that is, of course, the difference. No. Where is my – I did have an agenda. Where is it? Nope. Let's cancel that out. So I had an agenda to show. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the baseball series that's coming up starting tomorrow night at Minute Maid Park. I'm going to do this. It is the Houston Astros taking on the New York Yankees. And I'm going to tell you and see what if I have any Astro update about tomorrow night's game. Okay, available at 11:30. So I'm looking at, I can pick up my credentials. Yay, I can pick those up starting at today. So I will do that when we get off the air. And so game one will be at for the Houston Astros is 7:08 Central Standard Time tomorrow night. It will be on Fox Sports 1. And game two will be an afternoon game at 3:08. That will be game one of the National League Championship Series. Either the Nationals or the Cubs will play at the L.A. Dodgers. And that will be a that will be on game one will be Saturday. So the Astros play host game one and game two at Minute Maid Park. Sunday is a travel day. And then on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, it is allowing them, on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they will play in New York if they need to get to five games. And then if there's a game six and seven, those games will be played back here at Minute Maid Park because the Astros do have home field advantage. So there could be a lot of baseball played in this area over the next couple of weeks. We are hoping that it will be, because if so, the Astros will be, hello, Joanne. Oh, my gosh, my dear friend Joanne, it's so good to see you. The Astros will hopefully beat the Yankees and then move on to the World Series. I did a show last week, and Isaiah said, okay, so how many games till you get to the World Series? I'm like, wait a minute, hold on. You know, you've got to play each round. Now, keep in mind the Cleveland Indians had a lead, a 2-0 lead in this series, and ended up losing 3-2 to the Yankees. The Indians, of course, you know, were the favorites in that. You know, they had the best record in the American League. But it's the second year in a row that the Cleveland Indians blew a lead. You know, they had a series lead last year. And so Cleveland Indians fans are kind of feeling it a little bit this morning. And Don Payne says he thinks the Astros should be favorite in the series. You know, I think so too, Don. But when it, you know, you just, I think the Astros, I agree with you, should be favored. But, you know, this time of year, pitching and defense means so much. And that's one of the things Elena said, is it'll come down to the bullpen. And that's interesting. Both teams are powerful. They produce a lot of runs, but the better bullpen should prevail. So I'd like to know, in this series where the Astros just defeated the Boston Red Sox, in Game 4 at Boston, when A.J. Lynch went to not his bullpen in the fifth inning, but to his starting rotation and put his ace in, Justin Verlander, to pitch in the fifth inning. It was a, I don't know if you want to call it a risky move. They won, so it worked. But when he got in, he gave up a two-run home run and the lead. But also on the other side, you saw the Boston Red Sox manager, you saw Farrell bring in Chris Sale, his ace. So, and I'm not sure. I just sent in to the tech people to find out why it's not letting my guests join the show. So hopefully that link will work again in a moment. So what do you guys think about A.J. Hinch going to Justin Verlander in the fifth? And do we think that – is that an indication that there's not as much confidence in the bullpen? Or, I mean, clearly they wanted to win Game 4 to not have a Game 5, to just get that series over with. But now we go to a best-of-7 series. Do we think we might see more of that? The good thing for the Astros is while you have Justin Verlander as your ace, you also have Dallas Keuchel. You have two Cy Young winners in your starting rotation. But, you know, how many innings do you need to get from your starting pitcher in postseason? And when do you want to be able to turn it over to your bullpen? How far do you need your starting pitching to go? I mean, I think, you know, if you get – you definitely want to get 6 innings, right? If you get 7, that's like probably gravy at this point. But do you then want to go to a – you know, you want to pull in your starting pitchers? I just think it's interesting, but that's why you have to play the games, right? You can't just talk about what you might like or what sounds good or what looks good on paper. You actually have to play the game and actually see what happens. So clearly in Game 1, which will be Friday night, they will – well, I say clearly. I haven't seen where they've announced the starters just yet. But it looks like – because I was going back to my Dallas Keuchel is going to be the starter in Game 1. Okay. He's a starter in Game 1. I was looking at my notes from the Astros. And blah, blah, blah. They're working out this afternoon. Okay, yeah. So Dallas Keuchel is going to be the starter for Game 1, and he'll be available after today. Okay, after workout today. So that's who's starting Game 1. So then obviously Justin Verlander will start in Game 2. And let's see. So there's a problem with apparently my link for the Facebook Live show. So I'm actually going to do something a little bit different and bring in – let's do this. And bring in a guest on the phone, which means you guys won't get to see them, but you can actually at least hear. All right, so we're going to do that for just a moment. Don agrees that the bullpen will make a difference. I thought, you know what, Don, when I saw him bring in Verlander, I thought, wow, that is kind of risky. In this series, he needs to depend on the bullpen. Don thinks the series will go 7 games. Getting 5 to 6 innings from the starters would be great. You got to get 5. I mean, 6 would be – I think 6 is great. And if you ever got 7, that'd be like almost a complete game. But I think you're right, Don. He's going to have to rely on his bullpen. How do you guys feel about the Astros' bullpen? Elena, I'm curious to what you think. How do you feel about the Astros bullpen and in terms of, you know, how good they can be and how good they are and what it is they can what they can withstand from this Yankees lineup, you know? You know, and of course in early in the series, Joe Girardi, the Yankees manager, was been really kind of criticized and given a lot of grief from some managerial decisions he made. But one of the things I like about A.J. Hinch, he always says, listen, I got to manage my team. You know, he's not going to talk about what another manager does or, you know, what he will do is talk about what his team is doing and what he feels like they need to do. And he won't be at all critical of, you know, of other teams. And other managers and their decisions, because as he said, because I have enough to do with just managing my team, you know, my bench, my rotation, my bullpen. So I think it is an exciting time to be in Houston. It is an exciting time to be a baseball fan. And some people are only baseball fans this time of year, so it is great. If you are a baseball fan only this time of year, lucky for you to be a Houston Astros fan, right? Elena says, you should only have to use a starter out of the pen if you feel the game is a must-win game, and that starter gives you the best chance to win. Now, of course, if a regular season starter has been relegated to the pen for the playoffs, then that's true. Then that guy will be used whenever the manager calls on him. Okay, that makes sense. But at this point in postseason, and now that you're going in a seven-game series, you're going to have to use your bullpen. So if you guys who follow the Astros had to say, if you look at the Astros, and we're going to come and bring in my guest in just a moment. If you look at the Astros bullpen and the Yankees bullpen, I'd love to know who you'd give the advantage to, because we clearly know that pitching is going to be a huge issue with the pitching is going to be a huge issue in terms of what happens in the series. All right, so I told you guys earlier that I was going to bring in a couple of guests. One of the guests is joining me now. It's Mike Jackson, who is a former a retired baseball player. He was a closer. He's a little sad today because his Cleveland Indians, a team he has pitched for, also he played for the Astros, but he was an Indian for much longer, did not make it to the next round, but he is joining us today. He's been on the show. It's been a while, but Mike Jackson, thank you for joining me today, and good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Kim. I'm doing very good. Happy to be on the show again.
So let me ask you, we've been talking a little bit about pitching. First of all, I know that you were disappointed that your Cleveland Indians didn't make it to the championship series. What are your thoughts about the matchup with the Astros and the Yankees?
I think it's going to be a very good matchup. You look at the Yankees' power, their lineup. They have a lot of guys that can hit the ball out of the ballpark. And you're looking at that young Houston lineup going against that powerful Yankee bullpen. I think it's going to be a great series and something fun to watch.
So let's talk a little bit about pitching, something that you obviously know a lot about. When you saw Game 4 and you saw, of the Astros series, and you saw the Boston manager Farrell go to Chris Sale, his ace, and you also saw A.J. Hinch go to Verlander in the fifth inning of that game, what did you think about those moves?
You look at it on two different sides. On Boston's side, they had no choice. They had to go with what they felt at that time to stop the Astros' offense and to keep their chances in the game. On the other side with Houston, I mean, you're up 2-1, and you know you got that final game back in Houston. To me, as a reliever, I didn't think that was a good move because Verlander is your ace, your number one starter, and he haven't been put in that situation all year. And I didn't think it was a good move, but, you know, when everything is going well, you seem to overcome that. I would have never brought him in that situation. I would have brought a reliever who has been doing it all year, let him get through the inning or leave Peacock in the game and then bring in Verlander in a fresh, let him start the in and off fresh.
Talking to Mike Jackson, somebody who knows a whole lot about this baseball thing, especially the when we talk about pitching and relief pitching, and especially because, Mike, you are a closer, and I just feel like that's when we, I've told you before, I just think that's one of those positions in baseball that, I mean, you talk about pressure, right? Because when they get to you, you know, it's kind of all on you to shut this thing down and make it happen. Does it change? Does the level of pressure or intensity change for, especially, you know, players in general, but especially for a closer when it gets to this time of the season, postseason, championship series?
Well, I think you're under the fire when you're in that role. You're under the fire every time you go out there, regular season, postseason, because, you know, you're it. You're the last line of defense, and your job is to go in there and get three outs. And if you don't, then you know either the game's going to be tied or you're going to lose the ball game. But I think it's intensified now that you're in the postseason because everybody's watching, and you know that all these games are important. So if you go in and have to nail down three outs against the top part of that, of that team's lineup, I mean, it's a lot of stress.
What do you think about both teams, the Yankees and the Astros? Their starting pitching and their bullpens. Do you give the nod? Who do you think has advantage, starting pitching and then with a bullpen?
Well, considering the way the Yankees played this last series, I mean, I have a whole new perspective about them. Last night, CC Sabathia, I thought he was, you know, just about done, but he had a great season. And that game he pitched last night for the first 4 1/3 innings, I thought he was just unhittable. The Indians could not hit him. And the Yankees bullpen, wow. I mean, what can you say? Everybody throws about 100 in that bullpen. But the Astros have a qualifying chance also, because you look at the top end of their line, the starting rotation, you got two proven guys who can get it done. You got Verlander. I mean, he's probably one of the best in the game as a starter. And then you got Keiko, who, I mean, he's masterful. I mean, he goes out there and pitch deep in the games and keep his team in the game. And but my only disappointment with the Astros is their bullpen. I mean, if they can get to the back end, the young guy, I think his name is Giles, the closer over there.
Yeah.
If you have someone to bridge you to him, then the Astros have a great chance. But they've been winning ball games with their offense all year. I mean, these guys have been hitting the ball all year. So if that continues, you got those young bats in that Astro lineup with Altuve. This guy is unbelievable for a guy his size. I got to lean towards Astros.
Elenis is wants to ask you if you think the Astros are deep enough in the pen to shut down the Yankees in those crucial situations. He said it seems that Devinsky and Giles are the top two relievers. However, Musgrove has been good recently with the better fastball. So you think that when it gets crucial, because as you mentioned, the Yankees have some bats. Of course, the Astros have, you know, their lineup is strong. I mean, even when you get to the bottom of the lineup, you know, you've got some. You know, they can hurt you. But do you think that they are deep enough in crucial situations to shut down the Yankees?
That's been my big question with the Astros all year. I mean, their bullpen. I mean, can they hold up through a time when they're going to go through a lineup that is just as good as theirs, and can they get those crucial outs in key times in the game? I mean, that's going to be the most important part of the series, which bullpen performs the best. Both teams have an opportunity to score runs. I think the Astros score a few more runs than the Yankees, but, I mean, anything can change when you got 3, 4, 5 guys that can hit the ball at the ballpark at any time, so you're always in the game. So as far as bullpen, I think the Yankees bullpen is a little bit more explosive, and I mean, I think they got a better chance to match up with anybody else than Houston bullpen against the Yankees.
Talking to Mike Jackson. Mike Jackson, you played how many years in the league? I want to say 19. Is that right? Or am I wrong?
I'll take that extra year, but that was about 18.
Okay.
19 sounds good.
No, a closer. So that is to me the pressure cooker position in a pitching lineup. Obviously, the starting pitching is important because if you start out in the hole, you never even get to the closer. But if you get to that game, like you said, it's on the line, and it just kind of comes down to you and you and those next three hitters. So take me through the mindset when the guys are sitting out in the bullpen, and, you know, it gets to be the fourth or fifth inning, and, you know, at what point do the guys in the bullpen start kind of thinking, I hope he calls on me now? I mean, you know, like, when do you start saying, I mean, yeah, if your starting pitcher can get through five or six, and if he gets through seven at this point, you know, in baseball, that's great. But do you start getting kind of antsy, like, okay, you know, put me in? Or what is it like in the bullpen waiting to get the call?
Well, first of all, you know, when the game starts, everyone goes down to the bullpen, the early guys, like the long relievers and younger guys who probably be called upon first to go in. But everybody have a role down in the bullpen. You got long relievers, you got middle relievers, you got setup men, and you have the closer. So I can talk about each role. The long guy, he's a guy that he has to prepare himself immediately when he gets to the bullpen, because if that starter gets in any trouble early or he gets knocked out of the game early, then basically a long reliever is another starter that's in the bullpen that's waiting for that situation for him to come in the game. And then a middle guy is a guy that will come in the middle part of the game, like the fifth or sixth inning. And then the setup guy will come in seven or eight. And then, of course, you got the closer that are coming in the ninth. But each guy have a different mentality because his role is, I mean, a long reliever, you know you're going to stay in there for a little bit longer than a guy that pitch short relief, which is your setup man and closer. Your middle guy, he's going to come in after that long guy once he, you know, had enough or, you know, pitch count get up. And then, of course, you got your setup man and your closer. Those guys normally come down to the bullpen around the sixth inning because now that's when the game is, you know, starting to change over a little bit when it's getting a little bit more crucial around the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. Those last three innings are probably the most important end of the game because if your setup guy or your closer – it's not on that night, you can lose a lot of ball games that way.
How big do you think home field advantage is? You know, the Astros, of course, have had throughout the regular season, had a better record on the road. But clearly you want to be at home, right? Because you got that extra game at home. How big is that?
I think it's huge. I mean, I think in any sport, anytime you can sleep at home, your own bed, and not be in a hotel room for 3-4 days or whatever, you're going to be more relaxed and you're going to be a little more, you know, aware of the situation in the ballpark and all those type of things. So anytime you get home field advantage, I've never seen a team that say, I don't want to play at home first. I really open up on the road. But like you said, the Astros had a great road record. And on the other side, you know, that pressure of playing at home could work the other way also. So you got to deal with family, you got to deal with friends, you got to deal with tickets and all that type of stuff. So it can be a distraction also.
Let me ask you, so Elena agrees with you about the home field advantage piece. You do have to deal with all of that. Tell me I think we discussed this before, but your finest moment as a big league player, and when you knew it was time for you, when you knew that you were done. I'm just always curious about those two things with players.
Okay. My finest moment was, of course, pitching in the 1997 World Series against the Florida Marlins. And it's game seven, it's do or die. They brought me in a situation where, you know, we were up by one run, and I was facing one of the most fierce hitters in the league, Garrett Sheffield. And, you know, everything was on the line. I mean, if he gets a hit, they go ahead and win the game. If I get him out, then we go to the ninth inning. I did my job. We up one run. And fortunately, I was able to strike him out and get through that situation and go in the clubhouse and sweat and pray like everybody else, wait for that last inning for us to get that last out, which it never came. But, you know, that's how it goes. But the other part of your question, how do you know? You know, the other opponents will let you know, especially a pitcher. When you can't get guys out that you've been getting out all your career, and you're trying a little bit extra harder to try to get the job done, and then your body also will let you know. You know, I was like 39, 40 years old when I retired my last year in 2004, so my body wasn't bouncing back and recovering as quicker as it did when I was younger. You know, I pitched in over 1,000 games, and my arm was finally let me know that, you know, it wasn't able to bounce back as quick as when I was younger. So that was my determination that as far as physically that it was over. But I promised my kids once they got to high school that I didn't want to miss any of their high school events or things they had going on. So that was the other motivation to hang up the spikes.
Mike, before I let you go, one final question. I want to ask you, how much does adding a guy like a Carlos Beltran to this Astros lineup, to the clubhouse? You know, the Astros had a taste of postseason in two years ago in 2015, and they lost to the Royals, who went on to obviously win the title. But that team was really young. And so they've talked a lot about how they've grown and matured and, you know, and they all talk about how much having a guy like Carlos Beltran in the clubhouse, what a difference that makes. Talk about why is it such a difference? Help people understand adding a veteran with that kind of experience to a young, and the Astros aren't so young anymore, but to a fairly young ball club.
Well, you have that veteran presence in that locker room who basically been through all the situation, all the wars, all the downfalls, all the ups and the downs and the ins and the outs of the game, and he can relate on experience to these young players who haven't experienced that on a year in and year out basis, especially, you know, in the postseason. You know, I think he is the right guy for that team, considering you know, the type of players that they have over there. They have a lot of Latin players. He can relate to them, you know, in a way that someone else probably couldn't. So, I think that anytime you have a veteran club, you don't have to worry about that because all these guys have been through the wars. But when you got a young, talented Astro team, which I think that presence that Beltran brought over there is just, I mean, you can see it out on the field. These guys don't get uptight about any situation in the game, especially these postseason games. But, I mean, they've been winning every game just about, besides one game maybe. But I think he's been a big factor to the success of why they're playing the way they're playing this year.
Mike Jackson, as always, I appreciate you. And it was on short notice, but I'm going to tell you, I'll be calling you again because I think we're going to have a little bit more baseball to talk about in the city over the next couple of weeks. But thank you for joining us on Chalk Talk this morning.
Hi, anytime, Kim. Thank you. And, hey, go Astros.
All right. That's Mike Jackson. Mike Jackson is the spent his time as a closer. A pitcher, played much of his career with the Indians and also played some with the Astros. And so I've been able to have him join the show from time to time, and I just hadn't had him on in a bit, but I thought who better to have join us this time of the year to talk about, not just because he played the game, but because he played this time of year, and he's played in these kinds of games, and he has such good insight, especially because we talk about pitching and how pitching and defense is a difference. All right, so we are out of time for today, but there's a couple of things I want you guys to know about. I am we're having a Chalk Talk event on October 26th. All right, it's a live event from 5:30 to 7:30. There are only 30 tickets, so I'm going to post the information in the comments below. But it is going to be Chalk Talk. It's kind of a tailgate party, and guess what? We're not talking just football. We're going to talk a little basketball, and we're going to also be talking about baseball because I believe the Houston Astros are going to be in the World Series, and so hopefully we can get Mike to come out and join us. Haven't asked him yet, but that's going to be October 26th from 5:30 to 7:30. We'll have some cocktails. It's going to be a really cool restaurant on Westheimer, and I think you will enjoy it. So thank you guys for being here. I'm going to give you the information before you leave because I just think that's important. Where is it? It is at Chama Gaucho, right? That's where the restaurant is going to be. And that is the restaurant, actually. So I would like to invite you guys all to be a part of it. And you can go to on this page, if you're, you know, listening to the show, the Kim Y. Davis page, you can see the link and click on the link to register. I would love to see you guys there. We haven't had a live Chalk Talk event in a couple of years, so October 26th. And then fast forward, some of you have asked me about doing some cooking shows. I mean, not cooking shows, but a cooking class. So I have a cooking class coming up in November. It'd be a great date night. We're going to be doing sports bites. So it's kind of sports food, but it's going to be fun and tasty. And, of course, there will be grown-up cocktails. The November 8th is the day in November, and then there's going to be another one in December. So a lot of things coming up as it relates to Chalk Talk, as it relates to food and sports. And make sure that you subscribe to my page. Like the Kim Y. Davis page. Share the page with your friends. I really appreciate that. So you will get updates because I am also going to start posting the links to the podcast, and I want you guys to download those. So your assignment today is make sure you're following me on my Kim Y. Davis page and that you're following me on Twitter at Kim Y. Davis. And go to the event section on this page and go ahead and register for Chalk Talk October 26th because we only have those limited seats. And then we're going to shut it down. It's going to be a whole lot of fun, like a tailgate party indoors with food and drinks and air conditioning. How about that? And I look forward to seeing you all then. As always, thank you so much for being a part of the show. Without you, it's just me kind of doing a really long monologue. But thank you for participating and being here. Elena, we'll get you back in. I'm going to call you. I'd love to have you be a part of a podcast I'm doing. And over the next day or two. Don Payne, always glad to have you back in the broadcast. Glad that you're well, Elena's. And Joanne is my only woman on the show today. How about that? Welcome, Joanne. And so follow along. I'm going to go out and do some Astros stuff later today, and we'll obviously be covering the Astros game on Friday and Saturday and then Texans on Sunday. We didn't even talk about the fact that the Houston Texans have lost J.J. Watt and Whitney Merciless for the season. So I'm going to tell you my thoughts about that. It is a huge loss for the organization, and I'm going to tell you why I think that losing Whitney Merciless this year at this particular time in both of their careers is a bigger loss on the field for this Houston Texans team. With that said, make sure you do something kind for yourself. Do something kind for somebody else, and as always, make it a great, great day. Follow me on Twitter at Kim Y. Davis. Follow me on Instagram at kim.y.davis. And, of course, please like my page here on Kim Y. Davis on Facebook. Thank you, guys. Have a great, great week and a great weekend. I guess here I can say it. Go Astros, right? I'll see you next week. Have a good weekend.